This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. This week, the vice chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee accused Russian President Vladimir Putin of ordering a campaign meant to undermine last year's presidential election. Said this during a public hearing yesterday. Meanwhile, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee is refusing to step down following more revelations of how he was given access to classified information about surveillance by two White House staffers. And former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn notified Congress he is willing to testify if he is given immunity from prosecution. So we will talk about the very latest in this investigation into Russian meddling into the U.S. election. And we will welcome your thoughts and your questions as well at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And we will talk more than just the Russia probe. We will talk about other top stories in state and national politics. But we'll start with Russia. Let me welcome our two guests. Very happy to have with us Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee. He's a former member of the Wisconsin State Assembly. Good morning.
Good morning.
And thanks for being with us. Kevin Benversi is also with us. He is the research director with Media Trackers. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Joy.
Well, let's. I'm going to start with this morning. We just heard in NPR News that President Trump is reacting to this news that National Security Advisor Michael Flynn is seeking immunity or saying he will testify if he is granted immunity. And President Trump ended up tweeting President Trump tweeted his support of Flynn, saying that Michael Flynn should ask for immunity in that this is a witch hunt. Excuse for big election loss by media and Dems of historic proportion. So let's start with you, Kevin. What's your reaction to this?
Well, I got to admit, I'm at a bit of a disadvantage. My cable company apparently suffered a severed wire somewhere in my neighborhood, so I've been without internet and cable for like most of the morning. So the Trump tweet's a bit of news to me. I think in terms of transparency, it's a smart move by both the White House and others in terms of just trying to get to the bottom of this. I think what needs to happen is there should be a solid investigation. I don't know if you want to go to the point of a special prosecutor or things like that. I think the Senate Intelligence Committee is doing a fine job. The House Intelligence Committee on both sides has become a partisan foobar beyond all beliefs. I mean, we'll probably talk about whether Nunez should withdraw or not, and I have an opinion on that as well as his ranking member as well. But I think in terms of this is a good step, transparency is good, especially when it comes to, you know, things like this. I do believe there has been, even, you know, since November, probably even before November, an effort to kind of, quote unquote, undermine the legitimacy of this White House by saying, oh, Russian attacking, put him in the White House, and so on and so forth. The problem is there's been no actual evidence whatsoever. It makes for a great conspiracy theory. It makes for a great, you know, Tom Clancy novel if Tom Clancy was still with us. But the reality is there's no lines connecting these dots yet. And it's so speculative, it's getting to the point where most Americans feel like they want to just tune out.
Yeah. What do you think, Louis?
Well, I was agreeing with Kevin on the first half of what he had to say about the fact that Trump should basically try to get this, you know, look into this and be open about it, and the transparency, and the fact that Nunes in the House has destroyed his credibility, but the Senate appears to be working in a bipartisan way, and there seems to be a lot of hope there that they will actually do an honest and legitimate investigation. But I think that's where our agreement ended. I think this is a real serious issue that is going to get a lot larger. And I think there's a number of other people who are going to be dragged into this, including Jeff Sessions, I think, is going to be brought into this a lot more. And I think Trump is either one of two things. Either Trump is guilty of something or he's not. If he's guilty of something, he should continue to, you know, play games and attack the media and things like that. If he's not guilty of anything, he should get behind this 100%, get this behind him, calm the waters, if you will, and you know, build back the trust in the election system. And I don't know what's going on right now. I think there's a lot that is going to come out if we have an honest investigation.
Yeah, and Kevin, I'm sorry about your internet situation, but just in general, do you have any sense that this is a witch hunt, as President Trump tweeted, or if there there's a legitimate concern here and it needs to be investigated?
I think I think it's kind of both, actually, in the sense that whenever a new story comes out, it's almost exactly the same as the story that kind of came out 3 weeks ago. In the sense of communications between, you know, Trump White House and Russian officials, and you find out it was like something like during the transition that happens in every single White House from, you know, here to, you know, at least, you know, the Kennedy administration or something like that. Therein lies the problem, is that you have everything no matter how minute, how small, gets blown up to the point where, yeah, it gets frustrating and you could deem it a witch hunt. That being said, I do think there are some issues going on with the way this investigation is going. I think the Senate is doing its best to do, the Senate committee, especially Richard Burr, Mark Warner, they look like they're going to be straight cops. The problem you're seeing, and I don't know, what Devin Nunes has, and so on and so forth. But I do say this: if Devin Nunes does recuse himself, I would almost immediately then ask for Adam Schiff to recuse himself, because he is not being a straight partner. He has been a partisan almost from day one on this. He's saying there's collusion, but provides no proof to it, and also, he's spending his weekends not in his home district of California, but off in states like Florida and Texas and New York, fundraising for Democratic House candidates.
Yeah, I'm going to share. Julie on Facebook says, this is like reading a good book every day, a new twist. It's hard to believe. What we learned yesterday, too, is that a pair of White House staffers, officials, helped provide Representative Devin Nunes of California the intelligence reports that showed that President Trump and his associates were incidentally swept up in foreign surveillance. This is the latest twist that now, you know, Mr. Nunez got a call from a person that he described only as a source. The call came as he was riding across town in an Uber car. He quickly diverted to the White House. The next day, he gave a hastily arranged news conference before briefing President Trump on what he had learned the night before from the White House. So, Kevin, that's a pretty odd tale, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and he should be straightforward about what the heck's going on. But the question about what happened with the White House staffers is, were they unclassifying something for him, which the White House does have the capability to do, or were they just providing it as a sense of, this will counteract the narrative? That needs to come out. That needs to actually be given to the American people.
Yeah. Lewis?
If there is nothing there, boy, these guys are really trying to make something out of it. The Republicans I'm talking about, not the Democrats. I mean, they are tripping over themselves. And again, if there is no fire there and there's just a little smoke, why not really play it as straight as you can, try to build back the confidence in the general public that you know, America is still, you know, the America we thought it was when we were growing up, and not... in the hands of corruption on this massive scale with colluding with the Russians. It's one thing, I think Kevin is right. I think it's one thing to be in a transition, to be having discussions about various things. I don't think anyone has serious problems with that. I don't care who they're talking to as long as it's above board. But when you begin to have discussions that were occurring before the transition, before the election, and also in the transition, if you're making promises that you're still, there's only one president at a time, and if you're undermining a current president, that's a serious matter. And these are the things that, if these things happened, come clean. If they're criminal things, then you have a real serious problem. If they're not criminal, explain them and try to win back the confidence of the public. Because right now, Trump's numbers are falling. The people, and if you look at the polls, the confidence that the American public has right now in what's going on in Washington is dropping. There are some serious problems here. If there's no fire, let's deal with it. And if there is, if there is a problem, then these guys, this stuff is going to get out. I mean, look what happened with Nixon. I mean, he tried to stop everything and try to do all kind of things, and ultimately, he stepped down. I think there's some serious issues here, and they're trying to hide them, and I think they have to be frightened to death of Flynn right now because he is a loose cannon.
Yeah, we have Jerry on Facebook who says, if the motive for immunity might be that there are bigger fish to fry, I say no to immunity. I have a feeling that those bigger fish are doing a good enough job of jumping into the frying pan without anyone pushing them there. And talk a little bit more about that, Lewis, in terms of, why would Michael Flynn ask for immunity unless, as they put it, he has a story to share?
The person on Facebook did it more eloquently than I. he used the language nicer than I could, more poetic. But anyway, I think that Flynn actually, during the presidential campaign when he was attacking Hillary, he was one of the kind of attack dog for Trump.
He was the locker up guy.
Yeah, and he was saying that if you're looking for immunity, that I think four or five of Hillary's staff got immunity. If you start getting immunity, you're guilty of something. That was his comments. So that's how he views immunity, is that if you get immunity, you're guilty of something. And now he's asking for immunity. So if you follow that logic, Mr. Flynn, he's guilty of something. I think this guy, he was making a lot of money dealing with Russia. Russia and the oligarchs are not paying a lot of money to either he or Manafort for nothing. I mean, they're getting their money's worth. And I don't know what he was doing. I don't know what his involvement was. And I think the vast majority of the American public would like to know.
Yeah. Do you want to comment, Kevin, on this?
No, I think I've kind of, we've both kind of beaten this a little bit more.
Well, let me follow up with the specific issue of whether Nunes should recuse himself or step down as the chair of this committee that's investigating this. He was asked whether he would do so. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
Are you going to stay as chairman and run this investigation?
Well, why would I not?
So do you think, why would I not, was the answer. Kevin, do you think that that he should step aside?
Well, so far, I mean, yes, his actions this week are questionable, and he should account for what happened. But so far, he's done nothing to show that he's not going to, once there are hearings and once everything else has gone on, give reason why he should step down. I mean, actually, David Hersani had a very good piece at the Federalist this week explaining the points why he should not. But as I said earlier in my comments, if Nunes steps down, then Schiff should also step down, because Schiff, as ranking member, has shown he has no incentive whatsoever to make this a fair investigation, an open investigation, an honest investigation. He's just basically there as partisan attack dog for Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer.
Should Schiff also step down, Lewis?
I think, first of all, in response to Kevin, everybody, all these guys that are elected, or these folks that are elected, are partisan. It's just a question of, when you play hard partisan and when you put the country first. And in the old
and
days,
he should come. He's made accusations there is collusion between Russia and the White House, but he's not come forward with evidence stating such collusion. What is
okay,
that?
Let me finish, if I may. Let me finish. This is speaking about partisan. Come on, Kevin. We're only on the radio here. There used to be a saying in Washington that foreign policy ends at the shoreline, and that when it came to partisanship ended at the shoreline. That when it came to foreign policy, that Congress kind of spoke in one voice, and America spoke in one voice. And those days no longer exist. I mean, that there's all kind of partisanship that is, you know, our American partisanship is going around the world, and that's not healthy. That's not good for us. The thing that's going on is, did Nunes do anything illegal? Possibly, if he was looking at classified documents in an environment that was not secured for a classified document, then yes, he did something illegal. But the bigger thing is the appearance. I mean, we're talking about the confidence that the American people have in our democracy. And if they lose confidence in the democracy, we're in big, big trouble. And this is that whole idea that perception becomes the reality. Nunes has done a terrible job in the perception of whether he is going to be an honest broker. Right now, if anyone steps back and takes a look at it, it looks like he is not in any way, shape, or form going to be an honest broker. Will he, can he change that with some effort? But right now, if he continues on the path he's on, even the Republicans in the Senate are saying, the House committee is a joke. It's not going to go anywhere. But the Senate committee, the Senate Intelligence Committee does have a chance, and I believe it does also. But right now, yeah, he's ruined his credibility, and he can either try to rebuild it or the leader, Mr. Ryan, should step in and actually show some leadership and set aside some of his partisanship on behalf of what's good for the American public.
Well, we will move on to some other issues as our Week in Review continues. We still have some other top issues in the state and national politics to talk about. When we come back, we'll talk about President Trump signing an executive order earlier this week, which overturned some of the Obama area climate change rules. We'll also talk about the American Health Care Act failure and what happens now, and much more. We'll also welcome the issues you want to discuss. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top stories in state and national politics. Kevin Benversi is with us. He is the research director with Media Trackers. And Louis Fortas is with us, the editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee. 1-800-642-1234. If you have an issue that you would like to put on the table, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Okay, we're done with Russia for now. President Trump this week signed an executive order which overturned President Obama's Clean Power Plan, which was intended to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from the nation's power plants. It did some other things, too. But I'm wondering, Louis, what do you think of this move?
Not very much. First of all, I think a lot of these executive orders that President Obama put into effect have never gone into effect because they're tied up in the courts because the other side sues. And that's the same thing that's going to happen with Trump's executive order is, it's going to be full employment for a lot of lawyers as they end up, basically slowing this down, trying to stop it in the courts. And so I don't think anything's going to happen overnight in terms of, first of all, a lot of these orders are not even in effect to try to undo them. But realistically, I mean, Trump is not going to bring back coal. Okay, that is not going to happen. It's sad about, what's going on in the lives of these coal miners, these People want to work. They're hardworking people. And I think we have to deal with ways to figure out how to employ them. But that's a different thing. That is not bringing coal back. And the market forces are such that natural gas is a whole lot cheaper. And even if you get rid of the regulations, it's just not going to happen. And you know, our credibility overseas is another situation. You have the Chinese, who have always been the big problem. They now, because their middle class is going crazy because they can't breathe in their cities, are now really becoming strong supporters of the Paris Accords and are becoming more environmentally concerned. This is happening throughout the world. India is in the same situation. And, you know, we can't be going in the opposite direction and see our country remain a leader in the world. I mean, Europe is just rolling their eyes at what we're doing. And these countries that have kind of been our, you know, competitors, thinking we've been too you know, forward-looking on the environment, are now becoming more forward-looking than we are. So it's a very odd situation and a very unfortunate situation.
So Kevin Lewis says we're not gonna bring back coal jobs, and we're gonna make our air worse. So what do you say?
Should I be building the Doomsday Bunker now, or wait until the Malthusian crisis totally sets in? I have always, the thing about the Clean Power Plan was never about coal jobs. It was about the jobs that were affected by states that were heavily reliant on coal, such as Wisconsin. WMC has for years been saying that this plan itself would cost Wisconsin taxpayers, Wisconsin businesses, Wisconsin farms, Wisconsin manufacturing, hundreds, if not thousands, or if not hundreds of thousands of jobs. This is now a good thing. If you're concerned about natural gas and moving from coal to natural gas, why is the left so anti-fracking? If you are concerned about clean air and the pollution that comes from coal power plants, why is the left and the environmental left so anti-nuclear power? This is where I always get frustrated when I look at the environmental left, and this is innate hypocrisy, in the sense which is only certain amounts of energy are good. Anything else, or if you try to actually make something, such as like France, which is heavily nuclear reliant, in Europe, which is also heavily nuclear power reliant. You know, we haven't built a new nuclear reactor in this country in almost 40 years because, you know, we're all still scared of a movie made in 1976 called The China Syndrome, for God's sakes. I mean, this is one of these things where we have this technology. We are one of the cleanest in terms of environmental, just manufacturing in terms of cleaning itself up. And I think that the reality is this is one of these things which is more about regulatory oversight and mandates from Washington than actual environmental nannyism.
1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org if you'd like to join in the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Kevin Benversi and Louis Fortas. And we're going to move to another topic, and I'll have John in Appleton change the subject for us. Hi, John.
Yes, it's not been so much in the top of the news this week, but we really shouldn't forget about this whole healthcare fiasco, because it's really a values check about where we are as a country and where the political parties are. I mean, we now know why the...
I think we just had a little phone glitch there, but I'm just gonna finish John's comment to some extent here, in that yes, Republican leaders pulled the American Health Care Act from the floor last Friday when it was apparent they were not going to have the votes for it. Since then, some lawmakers, including President Trump, have said that after the failure, that Democrats could negotiate negotiate with President Trump over health care reform. Yesterday, in an interview, U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Paul Ryan said he does not want President Trump to work with Democrats on new legislation. He said, quote, "I don't want that to happen," in reference to Trump's offer to work with Democrats on health care reform. Kevin, do you want to see President Trump work with Democrats on health care reform?
Given how he's stated in the past he's a fan of single-payer systems such as Canada and Scotland, I am actually siding with the Speaker in this one. This is the problem of having a president who is not ideologically aligned. As a traditional Buckley conservative, someone who grew up reading National Review and whose opinions came from there, it's weird to watch this president. It feels, in a sense, how I am kind of man without a movement this entire time. I was never Trump during the campaign, and I remain so to this day. That being said, it's a frustrating moment right now. I was actually out in Washington, D.C. last week, and I avoided the House side of the Hill to save my life the entire latter part of the week because I knew what kind of a giant, mess that was going to be. Reporters everywhere, don't even bother, literally, look at visitors, with like, oh, great, what are you doing here kind of thing. So, but the reality was it was a bad bill to start with. I think Paul, Speaker Ryan, came up with a bill that he thought was more about what could clear the Senate than what could clear the House. I think right now you have a White House which is frustrated, who thought, wow, campaigning is easy. This governing thing must be easy too. And trying to do essentially shotgun legislation from everything, which is, if we don't get it by this date at this hour at this time to our specifications, we're taking our ball and going home. That might work in the New York real estate market. That's not going to work in Washington.
So, Lewis, do you think Democrats should work with President Trump on reforming health care or fixing Obamacare?
I'm getting a little nervous. I'm agreeing with a lot of what Kevin is saying here, in terms of this being starting out, it was a terrible bill. Also the fact that the president is not ideological in any, you just don't know where he's coming from. I guarantee you he knew very, very little of the content of that bill. And also, when he campaigned, he was saying, I'm going to provide health care for everybody, I'm going to do better health care, and it's going to be cheaper. And this bill comes out knocking 24 million people out of their current health care. And Trump is saying, this is a great bill. Who is the guy? Where does he stand on these things? And the main point is what Kevin is saying, that this is a guy who doesn't have a core set of values that you kind of compare something to. He just is, I think, just looking for wins on the score sheet. And here you have Ryan, who is an extremely ideological kind of an Ayn Rand. I mean, the people that shaped Ryan are Ayn Rand, and the other is Jack Kemp, the former congressman from Buffalo, New York. Both of them, are very disconnected from reality, both of his mentors. They're very abstract, and their world and the real world are very far apart. So here you have Ryan, who puts together this bill that I believe at the last poll was 17% of the American people supported, 56% of the American people opposed. This was not a popular bill, what Ryan had. On the other side of the table is, yes, you have people talking about single payer, which it makes the most sense, is what Canada has and other countries have. And it isn't, there's still competition among hospitals and doctors and that, but you have one payer. That seems to be working very, very well in terms of especially keeping costs down. The problem that you have is this bill, Obamacare, because it was real clear he wasn't going to get a single payer in any way, shape, or form. He ended up with essentially a development of RomneyCare, and RomneyCare came out of the Heritage Foundation. So this is basically a kind of a free market bill that has been, kind of massaged both by Romney and then again by Obama. So when you're going to take it apart, if you're a Republican, a free market Republican, and come back with something different, you're not going to come back with something terribly different unless you go real extreme, and that's what Ryan did. Ryan put together a bill that was very, very extreme. Ryan's main concern, if you listen to him, there's a tax that's in the Obamacare bill that taxes wealthy people. There's a heavy tax on the very wealthy, a fraction of the 1%. And that's what Ryan is really driving him crazy. He wants to repeal Obamacare to get rid of that tax. And once you get rid of that tax, you know, you can rebuild something. But he is out to get that tax and cut the taxes for those very wealthy people.
Well, not only is President Trump saying that maybe he'll work with Democrats on health care reform, but he declared war on the conservatives in the House Freedom Caucus on Thursday, suggesting that Republicans should fight them in the 2018 midterm elections if they do not get in line and back his agenda. He tweeted, "The Freedom Caucus will hurt the entire Republican agenda, and if they don't get on the team and fast, we must fight them and Dems in 2018. So, Kevin, what do you make of that?
I kind of have a love-hate relationship with the House Freedom Caucus. I get where most of their stances come from. They are very free market-oriented guys who, you know, feel that at times they are kind of, you know, in their worldview, the last bastion and stance of fiscal sanity sometimes in the House. The problem is they also feel at that times that their job is to basically be nothing more than a monkey wrench in House GOP negotiations. I mean, these are guys who, like Mark Meadows, who's the caucus chair, takes pride in the fact that he essentially claimed the scalp of John Boehner. So, I mean, these are guys who, you know, Reed Ribble, who former congressman from Green Bay, was once a member of Freedom Caucus. He left because he said, these guys don't want to work at all. They just want to, you know, be nothing more than, you know, headline grabbers and agitators, which at times it feels like this. That being said, on the House healthcare bill, they're getting a lot of blame because they're the biggest identifiable voting bloc. The problem was that for every vote they were trying to get the bill more to the right, they were losing many, many House moderates in the GOP caucus who are just staring at this and going, this is a bad bill. As Lewis was pointing out, you know, the 24 million, you know, uncovered number, which was just bad public relations, even though that, you know, CBO and those who actually understood healthcare policy was saying, no, that's what happens when you take the mandates out, you know, and actually give people, you know, the choice to get healthcare or to, you know, we're currently under Obamacare, it's literally get healthcare or pay a fine. And that's literally what's happened. So basically, I think it was 10 million of that 24 million were people who, you know, would literally then be free of a government fine. So going back to the House Freedom Caucus, I think, you know, it's an understandable target for the Trump White House to go after, but it's also kind of, you know, what's the old phrase. Cutting off your nose in spite your face, because these are guys who he's going to need for tax reform and so on and so forth. And if he wants to declare war against them, he's not going to have groups like Heritage, Club for Growth, AFP. I was listening to a wonderful podcast yesterday where someone pointed out that, you know, the dynamics of keeping your caucus in line have completely and utterly changed, thanks to two men, Mr. McCain and Mr. Feingold, who basically weakened the party apparatus system so you can't punish guys. Then you add in the fact that earmarks are gone, so you can't say, sorry, we're going to take away this, you know, billion-dollar project from your district if you don't vote. So a lot of it is now basically, a lot of these votes are now ideological purity tests along, you know, instead of, you know, guys voting for their political future, which used to be what, you know, sadly, how legislature was done in Madison, Washington, D.C.
I'm going to jump in because we do have, we're past break time, and we have lots of state news to cover. So we'll move on to some state issues. after the break. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Something I wasn't expecting to talk about, but made news last night. The Milwaukee Public School Board members voted to make the school district a sanctuary district last night. And we'll get our guests to weigh in on that after this. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top stories in state politics now in this last segment. Kevin Benversi is the research director with Media Trackers, and Louis Fortas is the editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee. As mentioned before the break, the Milwaukee Public School Board voted unanimously last night to make its schools a sanctuary district. The move prevents school officials and staff from revealing information about students to immigration agents until school attorneys can review an agent's warrant. Supporters say that they want to protect children who are attending classes in the Milwaukee Public School District. Louis, what do you think of this? I think Milwaukee, the MPS becomes the, if not the first, one of the first school districts in the nation to do something like this.
I don't know about that. I know that we are technically not a sanctuary city. But the operative word there, Joy, was unanimous. When the school board voted unanimously, the school board doesn't vote unanimously on many things. It's really a sad situation. What Democrats and Republicans have tried to do some kind of immigration reform, and we need some kind of immigration reform because the humanity of this. This is why a lot of the religious groups are strongly, across, all the religions are supporting things like the sanctuary cities. For example, I was talking to some folks. You have these Central American countries where there are, serious gangs and people are being killed. And a lot of these gangs actually are transplants from L.A. They got deported, because they got criminal records. They got deported back to their Central American countries, and they're bringing their gangs and their gang feuds back to Central America. So you have somebody trying to raise a family, and, people are getting killed in their neighborhoods. So they come to the United States. They come illegally. And for those who find that to be the mortal sin, then they are guilty of that. But, their children are in schools. The kids are poor. They have language issues. There's discrimination. And then there is this tremendous kind of black cloud over their heads that, they don't know if they will come home from school that day and their parents are getting deported. And they don't want to be, the ones who are causing the deportation because, some authorities are coming into the schools and questioning these kids and forcing them, essentially, and frightening them into, saying things that are going to cause their parents to be deported. I mean, how do you study under circumstances like that? And so I think this is a very humanitarian effort. I support it. I think most people in many, many religious groups, if understanding what's really going on, would be very supportive. Did they break the law? If they're here illegally, yes, they did. Is that, the biggest crime in the world? Well, if we had decent immigration policies in this country, we would know, we would let a lot of these people in because they're hardworking, sincere, decent people.
Ryan on Facebook says, this is a move that has the children's best interest in mind. Kids have enough on their plate, and it's good that now there is one less thing that will interfere with their learning. But then on the other hand, Paul on Facebook said in a response to this vote that the state and federal government should pull funding to the Milwaukee Public School District. So, Kevin, do you think that funding should be pulled from the Milwaukee Public School District over this vote?
Well, that's up for whatever now comes out. I mean, obviously, you had earlier this week, I believe, Attorney General Sessions make some sort of a declaration against sanctuary cities. Honestly, I agree with Lou on one part that it is sad. I think it's sad that the Milwaukee Public School Board decided to waste everyone's time with essentially a political grandstanding moment. They really do not have, you know, the capabilities of doing what they say they're going to do. And if they want to violate the law, which is what they're really advocating here, that's up to them. The real question is, I mean, it's not going to be up to, you know, school officials, you know, to nail these people. It's going to be up to, like, you know, employers with, like, E-Verify and other things like that that are there for immigration checking. I mean, I understand the humanitarian aspects of this, and it's, you know, it's, you don't want to separate families, but also, you know, you have a Milwaukee public school system in which countless children can't read and have countless schools that are designated failing, despite what Tony Evers jiggles the report card to say. And this is what they're debating. I mean, honestly, I'd be more frustrated with that if I was a Milwaukee resident.
Very briefly, Lewis, because we're going to run out of time before we get to all the big issues. What do you say about this? The state and federal government should pull funding to the Milwaukee Public School District if they're going to declare themselves a sanctuary district.
So you have a poor city, you have a poor school district, you have kids that are, you know, laid out, you know, the example of the life that some of them are living, and so what are you going to do? You're going to punish them more by pulling more money away from them? It's just absolute insanity, and then the situation is going to get worse, and then people like Kevin are going to be saying, you know, our schools are so terrible. If you go into our public schools, Kevin, I say this very genuinely and very sincerely, when you are in Milwaukee, go visit some of the schools. You would be amazed at the fact that there is some real decent learning going on. I used to be a teacher and I used to be a professor, all that stuff. And I know I have some understanding of how a classroom should be functioning. And there are some wonderful schools in Milwaukee. There's some wonderful stuff going on. Please don't, you know, continue to kind of say how terrible they are until you visit some of them. I'll set up the appointments for you if you want.
Let me bring in one caller very briefly, Mike in Green Bay.
Hi. Listen, I disagree with the sanctuary issue with Milwaukee School District getting involved. I know for a fact, I mean, a lot of Americans have known that illegals came over here with the hopes of their children or having children, protecting them. Number two, this is a fact, and I know this personally, that even the hardworking illegal immigrants, they're holding jobs, but a high amount of them are dealing drugs on the side. I know illegals that have openly admitted that when they were in their home country, they were involved with kidnapping trade.
Well, because we don't know all of the, you know, all of the truth to that matter, because someone told you that doesn't mean that all of them or many of them are. Kevin, what do you say to that caller and Lewis's invitation, I guess?
Well, I mean, that's hearsay, and I'm not really going to comment further on it.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know what? We will move on to some other issues. There was a bill introduced this week by Republican state lawmakers that would allow people in Wisconsin to carry a concealed weapon without a permit, which would then mean that, you know, you don't have to have the training that the permit requires to have a concealed weapon. The bill would also allow individuals to have a concealed or unconcealed weapon in their vehicle. It would allow individuals to have a weapon in their vehicle as they pick up and drop off children at school. It gets rid of the school gun-free zone, though schools could still put up no guns on the building itself. Lewis, do you think this is a good idea?
No. You know, this gun issue has done very well for recruiting for the NRA. Most people, you know, and all these, quote, liberal Democrats that, you know, that Kevin will be talking about in a second, most of them strongly feel that, you know, people have a right to have, you know, hunting guns and to have, you know, guns in their homes if they're worried about protection. But this idea of, but if you're going to have people walking around the streets with guns, what's wrong with training and a lot of training? What's wrong with gun locks so little kids don't, you know, think they're toy guns and shoot other little kids, which occurs more often than I think we read about? What's wrong with just having some sane laws directed at safety and the general protection, at the same time allowing people to have their hunting guns or their gun for protection if they feel unsafe in their home? I mean, why can't we work that out? And the reason we can't work it out is that we have that now, and the NRA then, their membership stagnates, and so they have to gin up these other issues and make these other issues, and then you have some of the, you know, the more insecure folks oftentimes that want to be, you know, carrying a gun on their hip, you know, really buying into this. Let's get a sane policy, which I think we had years ago. Leave it there, and if people's rights are being infringed upon, then let's deal with it. Let's not make up issues in order to, you know, these ideas are not coming from the legislators. They're coming from the NRA.
Let me jump in because, Kevin, a response to, should we have a concealed carry without a permit in Wisconsin?
It's called constitutional carry. I actually wrote a piece on this, which is going to be on our website on Monday, about it. It's actually, this is a multi-state effort that's been going on. And it's not just the NRA, as Lewis pointed out. It's actually groups beyond the NRA. The NRA is actually playing catch-up. This is actually one of the fascinating things about this effort. The real issue here is, this is kind of for those people who, you know, you hate to go to this kind of sense, who believe that, you know, the Second Amendment means no permits whatsoever on guns. I can understand some aspects of this law. I'm not fully behind it. I mean, what the Dave Craig, Mary Furlowski or Furkowski bill is. And the reality is, this has actually been vetoed in states with Republican governors and Republican legislatures. I mean, this is not going to be a easy crapshoot that many liberals think it is. That being said, and this is, of course, the great irony I found out in my research, is before it was called constitutional carry, it was known as Vermont carry. Because Vermont, and, you know, any Bernie Sanders fan, you know, hates to admit this, is very gun-friendly. And, you know, and that was literally the first state that said, you know, if you own a gun, you can carry it around whatever willy-nilly. And that was around in 1903.
Because we have just a minute to go. Thank you for that. We'll look for your article. Former Democratic State Senator Tim Cullen announced this week he is not going to run for governor in 2018. He had planned to run, apparently, for months, but then said that the fundraising was no fun. And he withdrew from consideration in the race. So I'm going to give Lewis last word, and it's only 30 seconds, Lewis. Are the Democrats going to be able to field a candidate to run for governor?
Yes, they definitely will be able to field a candidate. I feel bad that Tim is left the race. I have a lot of respect for Tim. I think he is somebody who could work to kind of bring the state together. And he was a majority leader, very skilled, the legislator, and cares deeply about Wisconsin. So I was sad to see him go, yes, we will find a candidate, and we'll find hopefully a very good candidate. And there are people out there who are seriously talking about it and thinking about it. But it's a big step. It's a huge step. And, you know, you don't do that lightly, and it involves more than you, and involves your whole family and everything. So
I got it. Thank you both very much for being with us, Lewis Fortas and Kevin Benversi. Thanks to Brianne Shasso for producing the program. I'm Joy Curtin. This is the Ideas Network.